Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Well, how nice to be here again. I first came to Newcastle sometime in the 70s. I can't actually remember exactly when, but yeah, I would say it's probably 73, 74, that sort of time, 40 years ago. So, yes, as Chaitanya Vallabha Prabhu explained, I first met Prabhupada in 72. Let me just start by telling you, I don't think I explained when I was here the first time what actually happened that fateful day. But what happened was, I was a student in Auckland University in New Zealand, a very half-hearted student, I must say, or even quarter-hearted. And I had just come out of a tutorial special session with a junior lecturer, young man. And he had asked me, he said, okay, prove that God exists. So I just thought, that's no problem. Of course God exists. Should be easy to prove, you know, like with some arguments. So I presented some argument which I thought substantiated that God exists, but he then showed me that I had not substantiated it, I had not proved it. And I thought, okay. So then I tried a few more arguments each time he defeated me. And I was feeling frustrated because I was thinking, of course God exists. We all know that. So, you know, why is he like aggressively opposed to the idea? So I walked out feeling frustrated, and walking across the university grounds from the right-hand side, maybe 15 meters away, not far, I heard the sound like little bells ringing. And I looked across. There was Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada was the first devotee I saw. And there were some other devotees there. A few, like maybe six or so, with Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was walking along like this. And he would sometimes walk like this, looking down on the world. And there were two young girls, like 20-ish, less than 25, I'd say, on either side of Prabhupada, just like, literally like here. And they were dancing very gracefully and throwing flower petals under Prabhupada's feet. It was such a beautiful sight. And this idea just popped into my head. This must be like heaven. Not thought out or, you know, deliberately developed idea. It just appeared in my head. This must be like heaven. So it's a bit of a long story, but then Prabhupada gave the class. Prabhupada led some kirtan. The ringing of the bells, of course, that was kirtan, the cartels. Some of these young devotees were leading kirtan just behind Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada sat down on the little raised platform in the quadrangle there. Prabhupada sat down and Prabhupada led kirtan. And I was listening and I heard, oh, Hare Krishna. And Hare Krishna had been the top of the hit parade. It was April 72. So back at the end of 69, or maybe right at the beginning of 70, I forget exactly, the Hare Krishna record produced by George Harrison had come out, and it was Top of the Pops. And I was a Top of the Pops fan. So I knew Hare Krishna. I'd heard Hare Krishna quite a number of times. And then now here's Prabhupada singing Hare Krishna, the same tune. And I recognized, oh, this is that Hare Krishna. And then I thought, oh, I wonder if he's Krishna. Oh, a little confused. Didn't know so much in those days. So it made a deep impression. And as a result of that, I think I'm here today. By Prabhupada's mercy. Okay, so here's a question. We haven't chanted or read for a while properly. What would you suggest? How about suggesting that you chant or read properly? It's a simple answer. But, you know, of course we've got loads of, or we've got some number of questions here. We don't want to take too long on any particular point. But the thing is, a consideration is that hearing and chanting about Krishna, spiritually, it is like our food. If you don't eat enough food, particularly if you really don't eat enough food, then you just don't feel so good. I mean, you lose your strength and you basically will become dysfunctional. You'll run out of strength. Yeah? Even you can die of starvation. So in a similar way, in principle, spiritually, chanting Hare Krishna and reading Prabhupada's books, spiritually they're like our food. And if we don't get enough, then spiritually we'll lose our spiritual strength. And losing our spiritual strength means that the mind will become more susceptible to material influence. We'll start becoming more easily attracted to materialistic things on one hand, and on the other hand, we'll lose our taste. We'll lose that, the feeling of pleasure which we have if we're practicing in you know, like a good, regular way. Prabhupada said 16 rounds every day, you know that, I'm sure you all know that. Minimum, not maximum, and not that when you've done it then you stop, or then you must stop, or then you can stop. You should just chant always, actually. But the chanting 16 rounds, sometimes people say, why 16? Why not 15? Why not 17? Why 16? And it's a fair question. So the thing is, 16 is the minimum. And the idea is that, it's the same idea like food. Or we could use the example of driving a motor car from here to some place, some distance, York, or even, you know, London, Manchester, these places, which are some distance away, you need a minimum amount of petrol to get there. Otherwise, you're going to run out along the way, and then you're going to be in trouble. If you have more petrol, then that's fine, not a problem. But if you have less than the amount you need to get there, you won't get there. So similarly, chanting 16 rounds is like that. If you chant 16 rounds nicely, you will get through the whole day in like good, focused, steady Krishna consciousness. But if you don't chant 16, the tendency is that you'll reach a certain point in the course of the day, and then you'll start losing that spiritual strength and spiritual focus, and your mind will start becoming more susceptible, as we said. So these are some thoughts. Yeah, some thoughts on that subject. Wow, wait a minute. This is not a question. My enemy is calm, means lust, also crowed, and vasna. That's what it says.
This was the one more question in the basket. Actually, this was not the right question. I will throw it. Okay.
Oh, sorry. Okay, so I will put it aside. And let's take this one. This is it. How to control calm vasana krodha. How to control lust, greed, anger. Okay. Good question. Because you know, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Kama Esha, Krodha Esha, Rajaguna Samudbhava, Mahashano Mahapatma, Vityenam Iha Vairinam. I forget the verse number, but Krishna says that in this world, the great enemy is lust, born of the mode of passion, really, Rajaguna, mode of passion, and which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. Yeah, so lust, anger, greed. How to control them? We don't want to just control them. We want to eliminate them. That's what we want to do. We want to remove them and destroy them. So, yeah. The basic point is to engage the mind and senses in Krishna conscious activity. And this cleanses the heart, cleanses the mind of the dirty things. Prabhupada, you know, back it was, I think it was 75 or 4 or something, in America, there was some, with all due respect, fanatical Christians. Fanatical. And they're doing whatever they could somehow to present us in bad ways and make people think we're bad and we're terrible and sort of negativity. So one thing they said that we are brainwashing people. You know, brainwashing is like a zombie. I am brainwashed. Take me to your leader. So, during the Korean War, the North Koreans sometimes they used to try to, sort of just force the people they caught, the Americans, force them into some sort of state of mind where they could then make them appear on television, you know, some American, and say, yes, America is very bad. We're doing a terrible thing. Yeah. So this is the idea, is supposedly brainwashing. You know, I wish we could actually kind of force our minds. We never think of anything other than Krishna, even if we tried. But unfortunately, sure, you know, the material energy is very powerful. But Prabhupada, when he heard this, some people took it seriously. They really did. You know, we get up early in the morning. Oh, it's very nice. We're vegetarian. And we chant for a couple of hours. We just chant the same mantra. Oh, must be brainwashed. But Prabhupada, he just made a joke of it. And Prabhupada, he said, yes, brainwashed. Yes, their brains are so dirty, they need to be washed. And then another time he said, brainwashed, they have no brain. How can you do brainwashing? So anyway, the chanting. Oops. Offering obeisances a little too enthusiastic. Once I was in the temple room in Bhaktivedanta Manor, and I was offering my obeisances, and suddenly right next to me there was this crash, and a devotee had literally offered obeisances, dandavats, bang, straight down, bang. That's what she was trying to do. She's a good devotee. Trying to make that. So, yes, if we chant and render service nicely, it will cleanse the heart. You know, just like if you've got polluted water, if you treat it with certain chemicals, polluted water can become sort of technically pure. I don't know about here in Newcastle, but in some places, like Johannesburg, they recycle the sewerage. Hare Krishna. Seriously. They recycle it. And what's coming out of the tap is recycled. It's recycled. Yeah. Because even though, you know, all that, it's very impure. But if you treat it, then, you know, at least technically, you can bring it to the point where it's supposedly kind of pure. So, but the chanting of Hare Krishna and just in general rendering devotional service to Krishna reading the books like that, associating with the devotees, taking part in kirtan, it acts like soap, you could say, or some cleansing agent, and it cleans up the dirt from the mind. And what is the dirt? It's this: lust, anger, and grief. Yeah? Lust, anger, greed, pride, arrogance, envy. Yeah, karma, craving, moha, illusion. So this is how to not just control these things, but actually cleanse them out. And as you do that, then gradually you'll notice, hey, my mind is not getting into these types of thoughts so much. And eventually you'll find that not at all. These thoughts are not coming to my mind at all. How to develop and build up confidence? Okay, well, that's also an interesting question. You know, when I was young, like when I was a teenager, I read a book by Dale Carnegie. He is one of the original, not well, management guru, so-called guru types, and yeah, like a personal trainer, psychological trainer. That book was called How to Win Friends and Influence People. Did you ever hear about that book? Wow, that's a famous book. And there was one place in that book where he was giving advice. If you have an inferiority complex, what you can do? So his suggestion was, you sit in front of a mirror and look at your image in the mirror, and you say to yourself or to your image in the mirror, looking yourself straight in the eyes, you say, "You're great. You're fantastic. You're just a tremendous person." And if I remember correctly, he said you should do that for 20 minutes in the morning and 20 minutes in the evening. And then you'll develop confidence, self-confidence, and you won't be, you know, one of these kind of introverted or type of person who's frightened of dealing with other people. You know what I mean? But, you see, that's artificial. Yeah, it's artificial because probably you are not great. Wow. Probably you are not fantastic and just tremendous person. Probably you're not. You're probably a fairly useless person. Or actually, you're probably just an average person. You know that 50% of the people are of less than average intelligence? Right? Makes sense, doesn't it? So we don't want some like artificial idea which is just not true. And we're just trying to make ourselves strong or confident based on that conception that I'm a really cool guy and I'm like this and I'm like that. When it's actually not true. But in Krishna consciousness we can develop confidence. It's a different type of confidence. It's a confidence in Krishna. That if I take shelter of Krishna, then even though I have many shortcomings, but still Krishna is so merciful. He can empower me, and by his mercy I can be successful. You know what Chaitanya Charitamrita says? By the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, a lame man can climb mountains, a blind man can see the stars in the sky, and a child can understand the conclusive truths of the Vedic literatures by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So, by the mercy of the Lord, if we really take shelter of Him, and if we really try to serve Him, He will give His mercy and He will empower us to do things we never would have dreamed we could do. Like, for example, in the marathon, Prabhupada's book distribution marathon, I know some devotees who, before they were devotees, or even just in the early stages, very early stages of being devotees, they thought, me, go out on the streets and just stop people and just stick a book in their hands and tell them, take a book. I couldn't do that. How could I do that? People are afraid of rejection. People are just, timid and shy. So, but I've seen many of those devotees who were thinking like that. They tried, and then Krishna empowered them, and suddenly they found they were doing things they thought they just couldn't do and would never be able to do. They're just approaching people and getting people to take books, and it's amazing. So that means you've got confidence. If you can just walk up to people and just get them to take a book, it means you've got confidence. You're not in that, nervous mental state where, you want to just hide from people. So you've actually got confidence, but it's coming from Krishna. Krishna's giving you some mercy in the form of some confidence within the heart. So this is what we should do. Take shelter of Krishna, and then we'll see. We'll be able to, do things like stand up in front of a crowd and just tell them something about Krishna consciousness. Yeah, and things like this, you'd just be amazed. How to know what is right and what is wrong? Yeah, well, on the material level, it's very difficult to understand what's right and what's wrong. Like, I'll give you an example. We're vegetarian, and there are many people around the world who are vegetarian because they think it's right. They think killing animals and eating meat is wrong, and so we're not going to do it. Will be vegetarian because it's right. So, well, being vegetarian is good in many ways. It's good for the health. Generally, it's a lot cheaper, so it's financially good. and being vegetarian is extremely good for the animals. If the whole of human society became vegetarian tomorrow, what is it? The 11th of January, 2013. Then every year on the 11th of January 2013, every year on the 11th of January, the animals would have a celebration. Wow. Oh, they would. They would. So being vegetarian is good in many ways. But being vegetarian is extremely bad. Extremely, really bad for the vegetables. They're also living beings. They're not just things, just, you know, meaningless, inconsequential objects just sitting around sort of wasting their time. They're living beings. They're living beings. And they have as much a right to live as we do and as the animals do. So being vegetarian is very good in many important ways, but being vegetarian is very bad, extremely bad for the vegetables. And if everyone became vegetarian tomorrow, it would be just, you know, it would be a disaster for the vegetables. You know, just this massive slaughter of vegetables. So you see, you can't just say it's good or it's right. And you can't just say it's wrong. You can't, it's not that simple. It's not that simple. And, you know, if you really think about it, you'll see that on the material level, in material terms, you cannot really say that something is just right and something is just wrong. It's all mixed. It's all mixed. Yeah, anyway. But in terms of Krishna consciousness, we understand that when we serve Krishna, that's right. That's right. And, you know, even under certain circumstances, like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's telling Arjuna to fight and kill. And normally you might think that, you know, fighting and killing, this is not good. It's bad. But Krishna said, no, you fight and kill. And because Arjuna did that, he was liberated. Yeah. So on the absolute platform, when things are done as service to Krishna, then in a general sense, they become good, even though by material standards, in at least in some cases, they may not be considered to be so good, like fighting and killing. Prabhupada said that when Krishna was a child, when Krishna was good, he was good. And when Krishna was bad, he was good. Krishna would steal the butter. And there's a story. Krishna stole the butter. And this one, he would go around the same houses stealing butter. every day, every other day. And this one lady, she got a bit disturbed, you know, this child stealing my butter. So one day she ambushed him. She caught him and she grabbed hold of his hand and just and told him, "I'm taking you to your mother and I'm going to see that she chastises you." So she's dragging Krishna. Krishna's trying to escape, but she's holding on and just dragging him to the house of Mother Yashoda. On the way, Krishna transformed himself into the same shape as that lady's son. But she didn't notice because she's dragging him behind. And the lady knocked on the door. And Mother Yashoda came to the door. And the lady said, "Just see, I caught him. I caught him, he was stealing the butter. I want to see you chastise him." And Mother Yashoda's looking and thinking, "What's going on here? This is this lady's son. At least it looks like that." And Mother Yashoda said, "Look, you know, I think there's some mistake. Have a look." And the lady looked around and she was shocked. "It's my son. How could it be? What's going on here?" So anyway, in great confusion, she then walked home holding Krishna in the form of her son. And Krishna turned back into Krishna. And then he pulled on the lady's hand and said, "Hey, listen, don't you do that again, okay? You do that again, I will change myself into your husband. And you really look stupid." But one devotee prays that, "My dear Lord Krishna, just as you stole the butter, just as you stole the clothes of the gopis, please, please steal my heart. Because my heart is caught in the material world. And I don't know how to really get it out. You'll have to steal it." Yeah. So, yes. When you're doing things in service to Krishna, basically, that's right. Even Arjuna killing is right. Because you have to be a little careful, you know. Don't start thinking that, yes, well, I will steal for Krishna. Because it's for Krishna. It's okay. It's probably not a good idea. But in a certain sense, under certain circumstances, it may not be wrong to steal for Krishna. Do bad qualities automatically disappear when we practice devotional service, or do I have to work on them? Well, both, actually. Both. The main thing is that as you practice Krishna consciousness and you're cleaning the heart, cleaning the dirt out, the dirt being lust, anger, greed, etc. So as you're cleaning it out through rendering devotional service, through chanting, reading, serving, attending the programs, associating, they're all activities for cleansing the heart. That's the main thing. But in the meantime, some of those bad habits, that lust, that anger, it hasn't all gone yet. You're cleaning, it's going, but it hasn't gone completely. Yeah. So, therefore, you may someday get angry with someone, even though you're becoming free from anger, but you're not yet completely free. So you may then feel angry with someone and think, okay, I want to pinch him on the nose. And then you think, well, you know, I'm becoming purified through the process of devotional service. I don't need to make an artificial effort to develop good qualities. So if I feel like punching him in the nose, I should punch him. Because it would be artificial to stop myself seeing I feel like that. But no. The basic idea is you carry on with your practice of Krishna consciousness. These things are being cleansed out. But in the meantime, if one of them tries to come up and influence you, then you have to stop it. Not that you go around all day thinking, I must not become angry, I must not become angry. Or, you know, I must not look at the opposite sex, I must not look at the opposite sex. It's not that we just go around all day just thinking like that. We should go around thinking of Krishna. And this will cleanse the heart. But if one of these things comes up, then we may have to stop it. Yeah. So in that way, it's a combination. Okay. Please could you describe to me a way to focus the mind when chanting japa for long periods of time? My mind is very restless and I'm searching for a way to chant my rounds without my mind wandering. A way to focus my attention on the sound of the mantra for a long period of time. Yes, well, that's an excellent question. And there are different things we can say. One is that in many cases, maybe not all, but in many, it helps devotees with their chanting. It helps if they chant with other devotees. Some devotees, they can chant on their own and they prefer it. And they really get into it. So that's okay. But at least in quite a number of cases I've seen, where people are just on their own at home, or walking through town on their own, then it's more difficult to focus on the chanting. But when you're with other devotees, then the atmosphere is already Krishna conscious. It's not that you have to make the atmosphere Krishna conscious and then it's Krishna conscious. No. When you're with other devotees, then the atmosphere is already Krishna conscious and you walk into it and it'll just pick you up and you'll just, it'll be, everything will be easier. At least in many cases, chanting in association with other devotees in many cases helps. And in that regard, you may be aware, I don't know, you know, if it's being done much in England, maybe it is, but devotees have Skype japa conferences. Do you have any in England? In different parts of the world, devotees have Skype japa conferences. It's free. You can just form a conference on Skype. It's easy. And I'm a member of one, of a conference in Russia, in a place called Nizhny Novgorod. It's Moscow time. region. So it's, what is it? It's 4 hours. Yeah, 4 hours different, I think, from here. But from 5 to 7, every morning, 7 days a week, they have a JAPA conference. And some days you get 10, some days you get 20. Depends on people's situations. And certainly devotees who are members of these different conferences that here and there around the world, they say that it really helps them. A lot better than just sitting at home on your own chanting. So that's one thing. Another thing, if you really want to chant nicely, then listen to this. This is a good point. You want to chant nicely, get up early. It really helps. The atmosphere is more sattvic and pure, more peaceful. Even if you're on your own, it's much easier to chant. The chanting goes easier, and often it goes a little quicker. So you become more efficient. And if you want to help yourself in Krishna consciousness, oftentimes we say, you want to help yourself in Krishna consciousness? Get up early. And then we say, if you want to go backwards in Krishna consciousness, regress. Don't get up early. Get up late. And if you get up late, then you can more or less guarantee you'll go backwards in Krishna consciousness. Really. So, this is another very important point. Get up early. Here, whoever's asked the question is asking about chanting, focusing the mind when chanting for long periods of time. If you get up late and try to chant for a long period of time, it'll be much more difficult than if you get up early and then try to chant for a long period of time. So that's another point. So one, association, and there are different ways you can achieve association. And if you've got friends in the neighborhood who are devotees, just get together every now and then, or every day. Another thing is, if you want to really chant for a long period of time, nicely, attentively, and really become absorbed and stay absorbed, then it's nice to chant in a sacred place where, you know, like in front of the deities here in the temple. That helps. That helps a lot. Some devotees call it a sacred space. A sacred space. So in front of the deities, Prabhupada's here. This is a sacred space. And it helps to chant in a sacred space. You can make one at home, a sacred space. Basically, if you have a little temple room, and if you look after it nicely, then that's a sacred space. So yeah, chant in a nice clean place. There's a saying that if in one place there is a Brahman, a spiritually advanced person, basically, if in one place there's a Brahman and dirt, either the Brahman will go or the dirt will go. Yeah. But if they coexist, if they coexist, then the Brahman is no longer really a Brahman. So, yeah. And then to chant with a tape or a CD of Prabhupada chanting. Yeah, there are different things which help in general with chanting, including chanting for a long period of time. And otherwise, you know what Krishna says in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita? From wherever the mind wanders, due to its flickering and unsteady nature, from that place you bring it back and bring it back under the control of the self. So if all else fails, you know, you're chanting with other devotees, it's early in the morning, it's in the temple, and all these other things, if they're all there, but your mind is still going off track, then you've got to be a bit firm with your mind. Yeah. Because the chanting isn't mechanical. It's not that you can just simply adjust some things and then just automatically your chanting will just be fine. These different things I mentioned, they help. But ultimately, it's up to you. You know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he made a suggestion. He said, it's a good idea to chant with either in a dark room, so you can't see him, or with a cloth, like a big sheet over you, so you can't see anything. This is more advanced stage. Why are we following Ekadasi? That's another good question. Ekadasi is the 11th day of the moon. Tomorrow, I believe, is Ekadasi. Isn't it? So twice a month is Ekadasi. 11th day of the waning moon and then 11th day of the waxing moon. So why do we follow? Well, two reasons. One is that, at least there's a Puranic description, that at the beginning of creation, the personality of sin is called the Papa Purusha. The personality of sin. He was feeling a little bad, and he complained to Lord Vishnu. And he said, my Lord, here I am, I'm the personality of sin, and I try to engage everyone and get everyone into sinful activity. But I feel dissatisfied. I just feel like I'm not engaging people in sinful activity enough. So you've got to give me some facility, some special opportunity, so I can engage the people in sinful activity more. And Lord Vishnu said, all right, then on Ekadasi, you can reside in grain. So therefore, it's understood that if you eat grains on Ekadasi, you are committing all sinful activities. Even, the extreme ones like killing people and, you know, the really super extreme ones. They're all there within grains on a courtesy. So, therefore we don't eat grains on a courtesy. I remember once in Bhaktivedanta Mela. See, the problem, the safest thing is to not eat anything. I'm serious. I just said the safest thing. Because then, you know, you're not going to eat, you won't make a mistake if you just don't eat anything. I remember once in Bhaktivedanta Mela, many years ago, really a long time ago, like in the later 70s, you know, there was like at least 100 devotees living in the temple, probably a lot more. And the cook cooked, it was a courtesy, the cook cooked nice prasada. And we all sat down, we all started eating prasada. And one devotee said, hey, yeah, there's peace in this sati. And then we all went, oh no, we all broke a courtesy. So we decided, okay, tomorrow we're all going to observe a courtesy again. Yeah, because in those days, we had not heard of Pandavindyajana Ekadasi, if you've heard of that. Yeah, it was unknown in the ISKCON world. And in fact, actually, what Prabhupada said to do, if you break Ekadasi, is to observe it the next day. That's what Prabhupada actually said. So anyway, we decided to do that. Right, tomorrow, Ekadasi again. Okay, so tomorrow came and we sat down and we're now having lunch at Bhaktivedanta Mela. And the devotee said, hey. I forget exactly what it was, but it was some grains of corn or beans or something was in the sabji. Oh no, twice in a row, oh no. So I think we may have given up and waited for the next occasion. I forget exactly what happened, but I do remember those 2 days in a row, that really a lot of devotees breaking ekadasi. Now there's another thing though, there's a second consideration, is that Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Lord, because there's more danger, because sin is in grains, so because there's more danger, the Lord gives more mercy. So if you observe a courtesy nicely, and if you really chant nicely, the Lord gives you special mercy. Therefore, sometimes Ekadasi is called the day of Sri Hari, the day of the Supreme Lord. On one hand, there's this challenge. You've got to be careful. Otherwise, you know, you'll make a bad mistake. On the other hand, the Lord is being especially merciful, understanding that it's more difficult. So therefore there's special mercy. And therefore Prabhupada said, he suggested, if possible, chant 25 rounds on a courtesy. I remember, I don't know what it's like here nowadays, but when I joined, Ekadasi meant 25 rounds. It was just the program. Yeah, and Prabhupada encouraged this. He d- did not insist on it, but he definitely encouraged it, that on the Kodesi you chant more, 25 or more rounds. Yeah. And then you get extra mercy, special mercy. So it's a dangerous day, you could say, and it's also a very merciful day. And you may have seen in our calendar how sometimes you get a situation where it is the Ekadasi is on different days of the week in different places. Did you ever see that? In India it's Ekadasi one day. In England it's Ekadasi the next day, perhaps. It happens. It happens. And I've had the experience of leaving India on Ekadasi and flying to South Africa, where I'm based, and landing the next day, flying overnight, and it's Ekadasi. Special mercy. The Prabhupada said, when you get old, you don't have to eat grains. Because grains, they're like building foods. They're really meant, or they're best for, like children, young people whose bodies are still growing. And when you reach physical maturity, and particularly when you get physically old, you don't really need to eat grains. So then you can be on a permanent Ekadasi. Yeah. Okay, let's see. So I guess this is from the purport of Bhagavad Gita. Oh, sorry, Srimad Bhagavatam. Is it? No, or maybe it's the verse 4:24:55. Whose question was that? It's the verse itself, is it? Okay. So the verse itself, 4:24:55 says, "My dear Lord, pure devotional service is even difficult for liberated persons to discharge, but devotional service alone can satisfy you." So the question, why is pure devotional service difficult for liberated persons? Yes, well, because these liberated persons who are being referred to, it sounds like, they're not really devotees. They're more like impersonalists, yogis. Because it's possible through other processes to come to the platform or a platform of liberation, meaning freedom from the control of material nature, freedom from birth, death, old age, and disease. Yeah. So such people are liberated. Impersonalists may be liberated. Not really nowadays. Not really nowadays. But traditionally, you would definitely get impersonalists who are liberated from the clutches of material nature. One such case was Shukadev Goswami. He was an impersonalist. And he was in the womb of his mother. And his father His father, Srila Vyasadeva, well, what happened was that Shukadeva was in the womb of his mother, and he's a liberated soul, Brahman realized, impersonally realized. And he thought to himself, well, you know, if I have to come out of my mother's womb, I'm going to have to deal with this world and all the people and all the attractions and all just the whole material situation. So I think I won't come out of my mother's womb. I think I'll just stay here. And he did. For 16 years. Those of you who have experienced motherhood, and you know, I've spoken to a number who have, and they have confirmed that if it were to go on for 16 years, it would really be a challenge. You know, what to speak of the fact is just going on and on and on and on and on. But you know, it's one thing to have a little infant child inside your body. It's another thing to have a 16-year-old child, you know, like a young man, more or less. So, sure, this is what the situation was. So Shukadeva just decided, I'm not coming out. I'm just going to stay here. And his father, Vyasadeva, tried to convince him that you can come out, it's okay. And Shukadeva would say, no, you know, if I come out, you know, I'm going to get exposed to all these things, all the advertisements, and just all of, you know, the opposite sex, and just the whole situation. So I'm not coming out. I'm going to stay here. I'm just going to stay. And yesterday I tried to tell him, listen, you can come out because you're liberated. You're already liberated. Even if you're exposed to those things, they're not going to affect you. They're not going to influence you. So come out. And Shukadeva said, you're just saying that because your wife is on your case. You're a henpecked husband. And he stayed. And eventually, Vyasadeva had to tell him, listen, if I get Krishna to come from Dwarka, and if Krishna promises that you won't fall down if you come out, will you come out then? And Shukadeva said, okay. So Prabhupada describes this in the, I think, first canto, anyway, in the Bhagavatam, that Krishna came. It's actually from one of the Puranas. Krishna came, and he promised Shukadeva, don't worry, you can come out, and he won't fall down. And Shukadeva said, okay. Then he came out. But as soon as he came out, he ran. He just ran for it. Because he didn't want to be entangled there. So anyway, for people who are impersonalists, devotional service is difficult because from the impersonal point of view, certain things in Krishna consciousness don't make sense. Like, why have nice prasadam? Because you don't want to be materially attached. So the impersonalists, they don't eat nice things. They just eat something extremely simple because they don't want to they don't want to get into like a sense gratification of eating nice things. But we as devotees, we eat prasadam. And we should offer to Krishna nice prasad, nice bhoga, nice food. And then we should take the remnants and we'll become purified through that. But the impersonalists, I remember we had this one devotee in Johannesburg, South Africa. She was a vegan. You know, kind of staunch. She, as vegans go, ooh, she was hardline. Hardline. And she met some devotees. And the one devotee said, "Oh, you're vegetarian. We are too, the Hare Krishnas. Come and join us on Sunday for the feast." And this lady, she thought, "Oh, they're vegetarian. That's really nice. I'm going to go on Sunday and meet them." So she did. And the feast, I don't know how your Sunday feasts are here, but in Johannesburg, particularly maybe in those days, but any time, the feasts were super duper rich. Everything was deep fried. Everything. Even the fruit salad. Even the fruit juice. But no. But you know, everything was deep fried. Everything had paneer in it. Everything. Everything. And it was just oozing with cream. And yeah. So there's this lady, this strict vegan, hardcore vegan. And she came and saw our Sunday feast. And she was just shocked completely. So we didn't see her for 6 months after that. And then, but then she came and she became a really good devotee. Her name was Acha Vigraha. She passed away 7 years ago in Vrindavan. Yeah. And, you know, the devotees have kirtan, singing and dancing. And for the impersonalists, all you meant to do, you meant to sit down and just go, "Oh," or something like that. But singing and dancing in kirtan with musical instruments, forget it, for the impersonalists. So you see, like this, and there are other ways too. The impersonalists, they cannot really handle, cannot understand devotional service, how devotional service is a pure activity. They think it's a contaminated activity. Yeah. And even, for example, like we accept Radha and Krishna as being the topmost. Krishna's the original Supreme Lord, Radharani's his eternal consort. But other Vaishnav sampradayas, they're devotees, but they don't accept Radha and Krishna as being the high, at least as being the highest form. They don't accept. They, more often than not, they accept Vishnu, basically means Mahavishnu, as the supreme form of the Lord. And it's the followers of Vallabhacharya, Pusti Marg. It's like a Gujarati line, but it's in one of the sampradayas. I think it's Kumar Sampradaya, either Kumar or Rudra. So they, you know, they have a whole angle on it. They say they worship Ladu Gopal. They worship Ladu Gopal, not Radha Krishna. And they say that yes, Krishna is God, and Krishna is completely pure as a child. But when he met Radha Rani, he fell down. Seriously. And they don't worship Radha Krishna. They only worship Krishna as a baby. Oh, Krishna when he's very young. Yeah. So particularly for impersonalists, and here, as far as I can make out, it seems who he's referring to as being liberated persons would be impersonalists. For them, it's very difficult to render devotional service and to take it seriously. Very difficult. But, you know, there's the Atmarama verse in the first canto. Who knows the Atmarama verse? Devotees. Sanskrit first.
Remember the first line, Atmarams Chulunayo.
Nya Granta Apyurukrame Kurvantya Haitakim Bhaktim Itam Itam Bhuta Guna Hari. That even all types of Atmaramas, all types of liberated persons, can become attracted to Krishna. Because itam bhuta guna Hari, because Hari Krishna has transcendental qualities. And this is how Shukadeva Goswami became a devotee. How the four Kumars, they were also impersonalists, but then they became devotees. Yeah. But it's not common. It's not common. You'll find more just sort of general non-devotees becoming devotees and rendering devotional service than impersonalists. Yeah. Look now, we've still got, look at this. We're going to have to carry on some other time. I think this will be the last one for tonight. Will that be okay?
Very well.
If that's your desire, number one.
I'm falling asleep while answering the questions, because last night I didn't get a lot of sleep at all on the aeroplane. How can I see a guru as good as God? Well, that's also a very good question. The thing is, what is that as good as God, or sort of that oneness with God? What does it mean? It certainly doesn't mean quantitatively that Krishna is, all the universes are within Krishna. So it doesn't mean that we should now see that he is my guru. Look, all the universes are within him. Because it's not true. But still qualitatively, there's a type of oneness. So what is that oneness? The qualitative oneness, what does it mean? Basically it means that he teaches what Krishna teaches. In fact, he basically just presents Krishna's teachings. In that way, he's like, Prabhupada would say sometimes, like a post-peon or postman The postman, his perfection is to take the letter that your friend wrote some in some other town, to take the same letter. His perfection is just to deliver it to you, that's all. You know, he doesn't need to open the letter and make some grammatical corrections or spelling corrections. Doesn't need to do that. He doesn't need to think, hey, you know, instead of presenting this point, you should have presented another point and then change it. The postman, all he's got to do is just take it and present it as it is. And this is why Prabhupada called his Bhagavad Gita as it is. Because even though it's got purports, but note, Prabhupada did not use the word commentary. He did not use the word. Because purport and commentary are somewhat different. Commentary means you are commenting. Therefore, it's commentary. Because you're commenting. But purport means just what it means. What is the idea here? What's the purport of, you know, of some statement or of something? What's the purport? It means you're just asking for an explanation of the thing, whatever the statement or the verse is. You just want it explained, clarified. You don't want someone to come along and just give their own comments from their own heads. So, yeah. So, the guru, the bona fide guru, just repeats what Krishna says, basically. Krishna says, or Lord Chaitanya says, just chant Hare Krishna. And the Guru says, just chant Hare Krishna. It's not that Krishna says, just chant Hare Krishna. And the Guru says, well, you know, you can also sing Om Jai Jagadisha Hare. Are you familiar with that song? There's Hindu anthem. Yeah. It's not that Krishna says, just serve me. And the Guru says, well, yes, yeah, serve Krishna, but serve Lord Shiva too. Uh-huh. Krishna says, surrender to me. The bona fide Guru says, surrender to Krishna. Just the same thing. And you know, of course, the guru and the devotees, just the preachers, not just the gurus alone, but all the preachers, when they are presenting Krishna's teachings to people, then they may have to help that person they're preaching to, help them to see, like to understand or to see how to apply it in their own lives. That's another consideration, the practical application. So the guru, a bona fide guru, will repeat Krishna's message and show you how to act, how to do it, how to apply. Not just some sort of speculative idea, but actually clear what to do, how to apply. So in that sense, because the bona fide guru is, you know, clarifying what Krishna says and helping you to apply it in terms of your personal situation, then what to speak of being as good as God or having that value, it may be that the guru is more important to you than the Supreme Lord. Therefore, Jiva Goswami, he's actually translating a verse spoken by Krishna in the 11th canto. Mat, what is it? Mat bhakta or mad bhakta pujayabdika is, I think, the line in the verse. And Jiva Goswami translates it that serving the devotees is a more effective way of developing love for God than trying to develop love for God. That's a pretty extreme statement, isn't it? That's what Krishna is saying. Should worship my devotees. Yeah. So, Hare Krishna. Any questions? Okay, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm half asleep. Actually, I'm about 3/4 asleep. So, please don't mind too much. But, yes, we'll see you tomorrow. What time? What did we say? 11 o'clock. 11 o'clock. 11 o'clock. And we're going to have a seminar tomorrow. It's actually part of a greater seminar, which goes on normally for a month. Well, an hour or hour and a half a day for a month, normally. But it's on Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes, and particularly the demons in Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes and the anathas they represent, the obstacles, the challenges in Krishna consciousness that those demons represent. Okay. See you tomorrow. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
His Holiness Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj ki
jai.
Happy birthday.